You know, Michael, yesterday at 12 p.m., on the money, 12 p.m., I sent you a meme that you did not reply to. Didn't even like it.
Wait.
Don't worry. I'm about to play it. Don't worry.
Here we go. Number
one, yeah, Fortnite, we're about to get down.
Okay. Let me tell you the story behind this. This is a meme of Michael Scott picking up a speaker, and it starts playing a Fortnite song that Aiden and I like. Neither of us play Fortnite, but it's funny. Here's the story. I looked at that and I said out loud, maybe to Mary, maybe just to myself, I said, I wonder if Aiden knows that I've never seen The Office. And then I exit on my phone, and so I was thinking, what your meme provoked thought, and then I was just didn't respond. I don't know why. I'm sorry for not responding.
That's okay.
But I just wanted to defend myself a little bit.
Okay.
I've never seen The Office.
I feel like you could, you know, appreciate the meme without having seen The Office.
You're right. No, I definitely appreciate the meme, and I clicked on thinking, oh, I've never seen The Office, and then that played out. I was like, okay, funny.
I did appreciate the meme.
I don't know why I didn't respond. That's my bad.
Number one victory royale. Yeah, Fortnite.
Fortnite
about
memes,
to get down.
They're coming back somehow. Somehow Fortnite memes are coming back. Hey guys. Hello again.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to the podcast.
Don't forget to smack the like button.
Thank you for listening today. This is episode 6. Of the podcast.
Yep. Episode 5 on arrival seemed to be pretty popular. People liked it quite a bit.
Yeah.
But
so thank you for that listen.
Yeah.
And yeah, how are you, Aiden?
Yeah, doing okay. I'm a little tired, but you know, it's midterm season, so
that's right.
You know, it is what it is. Something happened to me this morning with a group project. And
not gonna talk about it.
Not gonna talk about specifics at all, but I'm a little nervous.
It'll be okay. It'll be okay.
I'm totally fine. But yeah.
But yeah, a weird morning. A weird morning.
Yeah. You know, I'm gonna just cut right to the chase.
Uh-oh. What?
Pride and Prejudice.
Not for you.
Not a fan, dude.
Okay, I don't know how to react to this.
Sorry, we can do more pleasantries. I apologize
for jumping in so soon. I mean, we could wait to talk about the movie a little bit, but I just got to let that sink in. I'm just kidding. I already knew last week
you did say that this is one of your favorite films.
Yes.
Which I'm intrigued to hear your reasoning for such, but...
You have to prove this to me, man. But I know, I will. I'll tell you why. But I mean, I did expect you not to enjoy it very much, and I expected not to enjoy it my first time watching it. I remember it's vividly my first time watching it, being blown away by Joe Wright and Pride and Prejudice.
I'm shaking my head. That's amazing.
I mean, I don't know, man. I just anyway, thank you for asking. I'm doing well too. I just tried not to jump in the movie too
Michael
fast.
How are you doing?
No, I'm doing well. Didn't have any trouble with the group project today, so I'm doing I'm counting my blessings. No, I'm good. Same here. Midterms creep up on you, man.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I don't know. There were several days this week where I just like, I don't know. I think just like the repetition of Zoom is starting to get to me a little bit. Just like, I feel like with normal class, like going in person and stuff, you know, there's travel time and stuff like that. So like every day, you know, is a little different and you get to,
right,
you know, do things in between class, whatever. But I literally feel like day to day, whenever, especially like my busy days, I literally just like get out of bed, take a shower, sit down at my desk, log on to the same Zoom class where we talk about the same stuff.
Sure.
And if you know me, I'm totally not a fan of repetition at all. Like it's
right.
One of my things that I hate most. You know, I'm sure that part of it is just like a lot of work that's coming with it. I'm just like not being interested. But I really wish that I was in person, just to get a little shake up on every day. But you know, thankfully, it's looking like the fall should be normal.
That's what they're saying. They're saying they're making pushes to,
yeah,
which who knows what that means.
Yeah, I mean, the university is what it is, but I mean, even in America, like,
yeah,
I mean,
the vaccines.
The president said there would be, or he was hoping that July 4th would be, you know, the first holiday back to normal. Wow. So fingers crossed that happens, and you know, able to be in person next fall. That's would be incredible.
It'd be really good. And how fitting would July 4th be?
I know, how American. how patriotic.
How American of Joe. How American of him. But yeah.
I don't know. Do you feel the same way about Zoom classes? Or?
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it's certain professors make it great. I have one class.
For sure.
I have one class that I'm pretty thrilled to log on every day. Well, not every day, thank goodness. Every Thursday night. But no, I'm pretty excited for it. There's other classes where it's like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
Repetition, you're right. And certain professors make it great. Certain professors are by no means are not bad professors. It's just different. And it's clear when certain professors put a lot of effort into making that experience different because it's online. And certain classes, and it's not even a lot of times, I think my favorite class is not great because the professor's great. And she is, I think. But I think it's a class that is very similar in person to online.
Interesting.
And then the classes that aren't really supposed to be online and are not the same are a little, they suffer a little bit, but you know,
I think that's one of the reasons why I enjoy art classes so much is like this semester, I'm definitely taking more like I have a science class and I have a like, it's a privacy course, just like modern day technology privacy course. And it's a lot of reading and writing. And then I'm doing two business classes and only one arts class compared to last semester when every class that I took was arts.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, I'm definitely missing the arts class just because like every time you go in, it's something different, especially when you're working on projects and stuff, you get a, you know, you make progress on projects and each time you work on it is something new. Whereas like, especially in, you know, College of Arts and Sciences classes, I feel like I log in and it's literally just like, boom, lecture and then discussion where it's relatively the same question every week, you know?
Right.
But those are starting to get a little hard to sit through, but.
No, absolutely.
It'd be like that, you know?
Yeah. And like you said, hopefully it's all back to normal soon. And we did receive...
Don't worry, Mom and Dad. I'm still loving my college experience, so...
It's worth it, I promise. No, it is. It is worth it. We can hop into the hate then, I guess.
Okay. Do you want me to... Go ahead. Whatever. I'm down.
Again, I'll just give a little introduction. This is Pride and Prejudice from 2005 on Peacock. It is by Joe Wright. Starring Keira Knightley, Rosamund Pike,
Amy Dunne.
What?
Amy Dunne. Amy Dunne.
Yes. Oh, right. Okay. I was like,
was I saying that right the first time or the second time?
Dunne, I think.
Dunne or Dunne?
I don't know.
From Gone Girl.
Yes. But Pike.
And the new one. Sorry, I'm getting excited.
I care a lot.
Yes, I haven't seen it yet.
I don't care about what you're saying. No, I'm just kidding. Yes, the movie's called I Care a Lot. Okay. Yeah, Pride and Prejudice again. I have Letterboxd, the app where you like track movies that you watch. My four favorites right now are Pride and Prejudice, About Time, No Country for Old Men, and Toy Story. And I think I was thinking about it last night, and I think my favorite of those four is Pride and Prejudice. I think I feel the most joy while watching that movie. It's a little bit difficult to feel joy while you're watching No Country for Old Men, though. But yes, this is my favorite movie ever, which is why I picked it for Aiden. To bestow a little bit of that joy. No, not at all. I really want this to be kind of the experience that we first talked about when making this season was what if we pick stuff that, you know, the other person maybe isn't crazy about or maybe won't like or isn't familiar with. So I tried that with Dial M for Murder and Aiden really ended up liking it, which is awesome. This time around, it sounds like Aiden didn't like this one as much, which I'm excited to talk about.
Yeah. I guess I'll lay out my points. I think part of it, I'll just start it off. I think part of it was I hit play to start the movie at like 11 p.m.
Yeah, that's not how you do this.
And
one.
So I was like kind of tired, and I was like trying to get into it. And then I was talking to Michael beforehand. I don't know that this film is specifically Old English, but it's definitely like 1800s language.
Yeah, yeah, not Old English, but a bit retro.
And like even, like growing up in school, like whenever there was Old English or like, you know, 1800s and using non-current words, it was always super hard for me to follow along just mm-hmm. because there's just so many, like...
It takes... actually, yeah, I remember... I mean, there's stuff that I kind of pick up every time I watch it. Maybe not at this point because I've seen it so many times. Mm-hmm. But, like, it definitely, like, takes a few watches so that you're not thinking about plot anymore and that you can really just think about dialogue. So I definitely... That is a barrier for sure.
Yeah. So that was kind of hard for me. I think at one point I was just trying to, like, follow along visually instead of through dialogue, and I think that ended up messing with me because like a lot of it is through the dialogue.
Yeah, very dialogue driven.
So I think I had to jump back to that. I did like pause in the middle and go to sleep, and then I watched it the next morning.
Okay.
I totally do not do this every time. I think like normally I watch it straight through and I like have my notepad out, whatever, and not once have I like paused and gone to sleep or like paused and gone and done something, but like I don't know, I get, not to like roast the film or anything.
No,
but
dude,
I just
roast
like,
away. Like honestly, I don't care.
I just like I had no problem whatsoever hitting the pause button and going to sleep.
Sure,
like
sure.
I just like I was like, okay, I guess this is a good stopping point. I'll just like hit the snooze now.
Right, and no, don't feel like you can't roast what you didn't like. That's perfectly valid. I mean, does that ruin a movie for you? Like obviously feeling like I can't watch this right now, I gotta do something else. That's like obviously the movie already isn't working for you. But like, if there's a time when you're enjoying a movie and you're like, I have a meeting to go to, does pausing it and coming back later really ruin it for you?
Yeah, I definitely have to watch a film all the way through, or at least I like to. Obviously, if I'm tired, like, you know, got to hit the pause button. But, like, just because I don't want to fall asleep and then, you know, eventually, like, lose my place or something. So I feel like hitting the pause button is easier. But I think for the podcast especially, like, I've been normally, like, whenever, like, the day that we film, I try and wake up the morning of and watch the films.
Yeah.
But last night I wasn't doing anything. So I was like, all right, I'll just watch it. You know, it does bother me to have to hit the pause button because I would like to be able to, like, especially in a film like Arrival, like with so much going on, like I feel like I would not be able to go to sleep without like puzzling myself for like a good 30 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
And then be able to wake up and experience the end and then tie it all back to the beginning. I feel like I would not be able to do. And not every film is like that, but I just said Arrival because it's a very thought-provoking film.
This is funny. I paused Arrival in the middle and went to bed.
Did you really?
Yeah. And that's never bothered me. And I think I've talked to people in the film and TV program here who are like, dude, you go to bed in the middle, you like pause movies? Dude, I watch movies in such segments. Like, I will watch a movie for 15 minutes, pause it, go cook, or do like a chore, come back and play it, or I'll like have the movie on in the background with earbuds in and listen to the movie while I'm doing other stuff. Like, and that doesn't really bother me. I don't know. And I remember I watched Where the Wild Things Are by Spike Jonze, like while I was doing something totally that needed my focus. So like I literally listened to the whole movie, didn't watch it. I was like, oh, that was a good movie. Like I was like, that seemed pretty good. But, like, I feel bad for doing that. I was like, and then after, I'm like, oh, I should have actually watched it.
Do you think that's a matter of just, like, wanting to fill blank space with, like, listening to something?
No, because I could have easily listened to a podcast or like, a lecture or a music. That's the word, music.
or a music.
Or a music, you know? But I don't know. Like, I think there was a time when I was trying to cram movies into my repertoire. Because I was like, there was a professor who was like, you got to watch movies. It's like, honestly, more valuable than school is just watching movies every moment you can. And I was like, yeah.
Gotta watch them all.
Let me listen to a movie.
It's like Pokemon.
Easily to breathe.
You gotta catch them all. Dude.
Yeah, exactly. Gotta catch every movie. But yeah, I don't know. But Pride and Prejudice, I watched all the way through. There were other things calling, and I said, now this nothing stands in the way. I did watch it all the way through.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
that we're kind of opposite on those two films.
That is.
Going a little bit further, I think, like right off the bat, there's a lot of drama, and like, you know, obviously, it's a drama film, like a romance drama, I guess. But like, I don't know, like. Right when it started, it was literally just like a bunch of teenage girls
screaming
about guys, and I was like, I don't know about this. And then even like later in the film, I remember writing down a quote where Lizzie, the main character, mm-hmm. asked her mom, whenever it was like right when her mom was like crying in bed because her younger sister had run off, and then her mom gets word that the sister's actually getting married,
and
she just like
excited.
Springs up and just like starts running around the house. And then Elizabeth says, is this all that you think / care about? I forget whether it was think or care. But then like the mom was like, oh yeah, like I have four daughters.
Like when you have five daughters.
Yeah, five.
Like when you have five daughters, like tell me if you care about anything else.
Yeah. And I felt like that quote that Elizabeth asked, I was like, that kind of sums up how I feel right now. I was like, is this like really all that you care about? And I don't know if that's just like an 1800s thing, or if that's just like a movie, like this is the setting for the film thing or something, but well, I just like did not vibe with it.
I'm excited about that. Yeah. Well, I think that's what the movie's about. It's all about the expectation of like what were women like at this time and what was expected of them at this time. Like that's what the movie's really about, I think. And I mean, not what I expected to talk about first, but we can get into it now.
I can come back to it later.
No, it's cool. I think I have a couple notes here about like how separate Elizabeth and Jane are from the rest of their family.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're clearly the two others. And Mr. Darcy says this in the epic rain scene when he confesses his love to Elizabeth, the greatest scene in cinematic history. I'm exaggerating a bunch of stuff. I think this is the best movie I've ever seen, but you know, I'm gonna use that kind of language and it's okay to disagree. he says listen, we all know your family's cringe. He's like, with the exception of you and Jane, of course. He's like, we know you two are separate. Or he talks about how like it was clear that like your three younger sisters, your mother, like their lack of propriety. He's like, and even on occasion your father. And he's like, but not you and Jane. And I think there was from the very start, like what you were saying, there was like a clear cut, like her family's kind of strange, but Jane and her are different. Like Jane and her don't really fall into that category.
Yeah.
And I think that was established super well. And I think that's what the movie's about, because she has this family, not very wealthy, not very skilled. They talk a lot about like what like the ideal woman is. There's a scene of like them sitting.
Sorry, that was me.
No, it's all good. I just heard something outside the door. There's a scene of Mr. Darcy and Bingley's sister, and Bingley and Elizabeth are in the room, and they're walking around, and they're asking Darcy like what's the idea of like an exceptional woman, and he talks about like the skills she needs to have and all this stuff and like her background and all this stuff. And that's exactly the opposite of what Elizabeth was. You know, Elizabeth doesn't play the piano well, she doesn't draw. Lady Catherine, played by Judy Dench, was like, what, none of your sisters draw? Like all your sisters are out in society? Like all the stuff that was like, your family is weird. And that's exactly what the movie was about. It was about this like noble guy of noble birth who was like, from society's standard, above Elizabeth, got over his Pride and Prejudice to fall in love with her.
Oh my God.
That's what it's about. That's actually what, well, and I think the Pride and the Prejudice is from both sides. Because I do think that that the prejudice comes largely from Elizabeth and not as much from him. But it's mixed in because then he did take issue with her family and what they were like. But no, I think that the point of the mother being so cringe. The mother and her little sisters were so cringe.
Agreed.
What's that?
Agreed.
Yeah. I think that was that was so intentional. To me, it seemed that way. We're just not doing well today. Aiden dropped his journal.
We're out here struggling.
But I want to talk. I want to talk a bit about individual stuff. So right off the bat, something to note, and I just can't get over it when I watch this movie. Well, lots of things to mix in here, but let me just say, right off the bat, like the blocking and the setting saves the movie from being way too expositional, dialogue wise, because there's so much dialogue based off of a book, and it's very similar to the book.
Yeah,
and there's lines straight from the book, but it's so dialogue driven, and if not done correctly, I think it looks like a stage play. Where mm-hmm. people stand there talking to each other the whole time. And that's not what they do at all. The blocking, there's always movement going on. Mm-hmm. From the get-go, they're walking around this busy, crazy house. The sisters and the mother are running between rooms. You know, there's like farm animals running around. The setting's always interesting, whether it's like a beautiful mansion or their farm. And it's... that blocking to me saves the movie from just being straight words. And I think that the camera does a lot of that as well. There's so many times where the camera movement is just so seamless. Like there's one shot that I think sums up my point. And like, there's so much of this throughout, where like the camera will follow Elizabeth down a set of stairs and land on Mr. Darcy's hand to show like what his hand's doing based off the interaction. And there's such detail.
Mm, yeah.
There's such detail in the movie, and it's just married together with the camera work to like really sell it. And I watched Atonement, which is Joe Wright's movie that he made, I think, 2 years later in 2007. And it wasn't really that detailed. It didn't have that same level of almost expertise and like effort, it felt like. And this movie just felt very high effort and very flawless and like very much in place, exactly where it's supposed to be. And I got that feeling from like the crazy specific blocking of people entering and exiting rooms and the dance sequences even, and like the way that the camera works so well and all that.
Yeah, I was going to mention, I think it was like A Big Ball or something. Not the first one, but the one where this is one of my downfalls with the season. I don't remember anyone's name.
There's Bingley, the guy with the red hair.
It was the dude that first proposed to Elizabeth. And she said no.
Mr. Collins.
So there's a scene, it was a party, whatever, and Mr. Collins was trying to find Elizabeth, and I realized that the camera movements throughout the house was all one shot.
Yeah.
Of just like walking down a hallway, making a turn, walking down another hallway, blah, blah, blah. And you could see the same characters, like at the start, I think it was like the mom and the two younger sisters, like, sprint across the screen, and then it like makes a few cuts through the house, and then like they show up again, and then you can see Mr. Collins as well doing the same thing. And I just thought that was super interesting. There are a few other points throughout the film where I thought the cinematography was good and bad. Just one minor point that was
okay.
That was bothersome to me. I thought the outdoor scenes were very well shot. I enjoyed all of the outdoor scenes. They all looked very nice. The indoor scenes, there's a lot going on. And maybe that was just the chaos, like they were trying to ensue chaos upon the setting. Kind of like you mentioned where, like, in their house, the Bennett's house, right?
The Bennett's, yeah.
The Bennett's, you know, the mom and the sisters are running in between rooms, and it's super crowded, a very small space. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that felt super crowded to me. And then there were a few times where, like one distinctive one that I can remember is when Elizabeth is at Darcy's place, and she's looking through a little crack in the door.
And it zooms in.
And this girl is playing a piano, and she's like, oh, that's so nice. And then Darcy walks in the frame, and then there's, like, that realization, and she's like, oh, my gosh, like, he found another girl because I was so,
yeah,
like, I said no or whatever. And then, like, both of them just, like turn their heads so quickly, and then it, like, zooms, and then she, like Elizabeth, like, turns her head so fast. And I'm like, okay, that's, like, kind of awkward to me. Like,
okay.
It was a little unsettling. It kind of, like, I know the film was made in 2005, so it's, like, kind of old. Ooh, that's weird. 16 years old.
Yeah, it's old.
That's crazy. So it's, like, kind of old, but I felt like that was, like, a very, almost, like, an overused type of thing that has been, like, that has faded out of, like, current day cinematography.
Well,
so I think necessarily, like, in 2005, it was probably okay, but it was a little weird to me.
That's okay. Interesting. And I'm going to argue with that.
Okay.
Because I think you're wrong about it being okay in 2005. I don't think that's okay in 2005.
Okay.
The zoom in, try to watch a movie with a zoom in and not be like, is this from the 80s or 90s? Like, and it's, like, impossible not to separate those things. It's so difficult. Like, even in 2005, like, movies didn't really, I don't think, even do that anymore. Because it's, the zoom in is so old. And it looks old.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think of, like, Judgment at Nuremberg, which is a movie from the 60s, I believe, which is, like, heavily uses the zoom. And, like, movies of that time period often did. But they use the zoom a lot in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's used very often. And it's, I think, used really well. And I think this was really the advent of the digital camera. Digital camera is obviously around before this. But people were, I think, still using film, largely. Like, people weren't ready to make that transition over completely. And some did, some didn't. But this isn't early. I believe this is digital. You could tell in some of the low light scenes that I think it was digital. But it was like, I think it felt modern to me in the zooms. And I think you're right. If any one of the zooms stuck out, it was the one at the door, because it was a very dramatic moment.
Yeah.
But I thought it was so impressive the way they use zooms. And they use high speed a lot. They exceeded 24 frames a second a couple of times. And had this really, like, flowing motion. In the ball scenes in particular. And there were a lot of the zoom ins there, and just, like, fly on the wall cameras, like, that, like, were, like, seemed handheld and were moving around. And the camera work, I thought, was just so interesting. And yep. I think if done poorly, you would have been like, this cinematography is terrible. Well, that's an obvious statement. But, like, if the zoom in was done poorly, I think it was, like, it would stand out more than it does. But I'll give that to you, that one is a little strange.
Yeah.
He's still bored by Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I guess, yeah, I mean, I think it was bothersome because it was, like, an untraditional thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, definitely, like, an old thing. I think the only, I'm sure that there are plenty of cases where this is such, but the thing that I think of most when I think of zooms and present day stuff is probably The Office.
Right.
Which, admittedly, you've not seen.
I know what, yeah.
But like, I've seen enough memes. Literally, like, every shot is like, there's a zoom in or a zoom out of something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, you know, obviously when you watch The Office, that becomes normal, whatever. Like, almost you don't notice it. But, like, I think to the extremity, especially the one at the door, where it was literally like I think it was from, like, her chest to the top of her head, and there's a little gap above her head to the top of the frame, but it literally was like from that, like, to her eyes.
Yeah,
like, it was a very, very extreme zoom in. And I think that it was very dramatic, like you said.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, you say The Office, I think of Succession on HBO, where and yeah, you're right. Like, I totally think of The Office when I think of zoom in now that you say it. But, like, I think another example is Succession, where it is sometimes used as comedy. But, like, I remember in the first episode being like, wow, they're using the zoom in. And it works super well. And it's a drama show. It's, like, kind of a comedy. But actually, it shares an actor. It's Mr. Darcy's character's in it. Actor's in it. But, yeah. There actually is a rule where you have to zoom in a minimum amount. Like, there's a 30-degree rule. When you change shots, you should change more than 30 degree of an angle.
Mm.
And there's the 180-degree rule where you can't pass over the 180-degree plane between a conversation. There's also a zoom rule, and it's measured in millimeters, where you have to zoom in a certain focal length in each zoom in, which is just interesting. That's what that reminded me of. Yeah, but yeah, I totally see how that could be.
I think moving along, I think I know there's obviously a romance film, but yeah, like the romance was not getting to me.
Whoa.
Like, I don't know.
Okay.
Like, you know, happy ending, whatever, good for them. I'm happy, but it definitely, like, it was very an untraditional romance film, whereas, like, we first, you know, developed the feelings for Darcy at the ball or whatever, the party. And he is, like, you know, kind of this shy, intimidating guy. And then it becomes, like, he presents his feelings and she's like, no, like, you ruined my sister's engagement. And, you know, there's all these bumps in the road where, like, at the end we finally get the resolution. And it was interesting because almost every time that there seemed to be some kind of progress in the relationship towards, you know, a growing romance or whatever, there was always an interruption. And I don't know if it's like this for every romance film, that, like, you know, whenever you start to progress in the relationship, that there's, you know, a cut to a different scene or whatever. But I just felt like every time that they had made some kind of advance in their relationship together, it, you know, some kind of family crisis came up or something to that effect.
Yeah.
It was kind of annoying.
That's called stakes. That's like why people watch movies. That's that. If you just allowed Darcy and,
like,
and
Elizabeth. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No. Let me say this.
If
you allowed Darcy and Elizabeth to just, they see each other. He ruined Bingley's relationship with Jane, and she's like, ah, whatever, I love you. There would be no stakes. There'd be no tension or drama. And so you introduce, oh my gosh, Lydia ran away, I have to run home now. Because that, like, drives a spike between this, like, weekend retreat that would have probably ended in them together anyway. And so, like, you want to make your protagonist, the goal of the protagonist, the second they introduce Darcy, I'm sorry, I'm getting so animated. But the goal of protagonist, Elizabeth, from the moment they introduced Darcy is, okay, is she going to end up with Darcy? Like, that's, like, the big question. And that's, like, the goal that you see in mind. And then it's a matter of getting there. There's either a straight path or there's, like, a winding path with a lot of obstacles in the way. One of those is a lot more interesting to watch than the other. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And maybe, like, what I said didn't necessarily come off what I meant.
Okay, yeah.
But, like, maybe I felt that way because I was uninterested in it, and I was, like, almost wanting the ending to come.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah, that's fair.
But, like, I mean, yeah, like, that makes sense. You know, literally every film is, that's what it is. I mean, like, in terms of Arrival, like, how the door opens up every 18 hours in the spaceship, like, you only have that time window, and then, you know, right when we feel like we've, you know, made a connection with the aliens, then you have to leave, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I guess that kind of correlates, and I guess that I was thinking that in terms of me just wanting the movie to be over.
Yeah.
But, like, I think also in terms of, like, oldness, like, 1800s-ish, like, me just not being used to it, or me not necessarily liking 1800 style stuff, maybe I felt like the issues that arose were not necessarily as interesting.
Okay,
that's like a modern day
100%
thing.
Fair.
Like, her sister running away, I was like, I don't know. Like, I get, like, I'm not super familiar with 1800 stuff.
The issue
that I guess that could make sense in an 1800s, setting. But I think in terms for me in a modern film or whatever, like that, like obviously, yeah, that's a problem. Like if your sister runs away, like, oh my gosh, I need to go. But like, I don't know. It didn't really click with
me. Sure. That's fair. The other issue was Mr. Wickham, the fear of him trying to take the family's money.
Yeah.
Because that's what he did with Mr. Darcy and, you know. But yeah, no, that's perfectly fair. I only have praises written down. I'm sorry.
And not to say that I don't enjoy romance films, because okay. About Time, absolutely love the film. Mm-hmm. Like such, and it's not even necessarily like a full blown romance film,
but pretty much
it is. But, yeah, but there's other stuff tied in there. But that's also every romance film. Every romance film is not strictly romance. Mm-hmm. There's got to be other stuff tied in. But like, I absolutely love About Time. Like,
yeah,
probably a top 10 for me as well.
It may have just been the time period and the dialogue.
Yeah.
Like that's just, that's a barrier. Sure. I want to talk about actually the romance writing of it. And I guess that's a testament to Jane Austen, the author. But I thought it was portrayed so well because it really feels like they don't like each other. Like, it felt like a very, very, very honest portrayal of like people in love that don't like each other, which is like, I think, a weird thing to comprehend and grasp.
Yeah.
But that's what it really felt like, and I think they did that really well. And there's other examples of that. I guess you could like kind of compare to like Taming of the Shrew or Pygmalion. But I feel as if that's not really done super well in a lot of romances. I feel as if I've seen rom-coms where it's like they try to be like, oh, these two people don't like each other. But they're going to fall in love. And it never feels honest.
Right.
I feel like that felt really, really honest. And that all stemmed from like how prideful both these characters were. Like Mr. Darcy cared a lot about his status and cared about the status of the Bennets. And I think was prideful in that way. But she was also so prideful. I think, and it doesn't help that he insulted her at the ball when he overheard,
mm-hmm.
when she overheard what he said. And he was not a nice guy. And she didn't like him. But she also just wasn't a very nice person either.
Mm-hmm.
And her pride kept her from admitting that she loved him. And I just thought it felt super honest. And again, I guess you can give props to Jane Austen, the author, for that, and not necessarily the adapted screenwriter. But I think it's a little bit of both. And so I thought that was done very well. I'm just looking through my notes. I already said this. Camera, I thought was amazing. Who did the cinematography for this?
I got you. You keep talking, I'll look it up.
Yeah, look it up for me, please. Pull it up, Jamie. But the camera was really great. There's a thing that a lot of movies do. I can't remember his name. Why can't I remember his name? It doesn't matter. Sorry. There's a lighting practice where, like, opposite colors go really well together. And like there's a bit of variation in that, but a very common color difference is like yellows and blues. And like you see that a lot in Roger Deakins' stuff, like Sicario. There's a ton of like yellows and like cyans, like very, very heavily. And like Michael Bay movies, you see that. It just makes it's very appealing to look at. This movie did that really well, but making it motivated. Because everything on the indoor scenes was done through candlelight, was lit by candlelight, but then you would see moonlight or even daylight come in through the window as blue, and that's like the way it would register on a camera. And so it felt extremely natural, the difference between like the blues and the yellows. I thought was done really well overall.
Cinematography was by Roman Ozin or Ozin.
Okay. Yes.
O-S-I-N. Ozin.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I learned about him a bit, but I don't remember much about
what
him.
What an interesting fellow.
But no, the cinematography was super good. There's one scene I want to talk about in terms of cinematography of after her exchange with Mr. Darcy, she goes back to not her house, but her friend's house. And there's the scene when she's standing looking in the mirror and it turns to nightfall. Do you remember that, Aiden?
Sorry, say that again.
Okay. She was standing looking in the mirror and it was day and then it turns to night. And Mr. Darcy comes and drops off the letter in her room.
Yes. Yep.
That shot was not done through like special effects. They had daylight lighting on her face and they turned them off and switched them out with nighttime lighting all in like 5 seconds and like moved lighting to make it look like the sun rising and setting. And made a nighttime lighting setup.
Wow.
So it was all done in camera, no special additional special effects besides gaffers moving lights up and down. And so I thought that was super impressive.
Yeah. I actually have done something like that before. Yeah. It's extremely challenging.
I was going to say, Aiden's like, it's actually really easy. I don't know why you're freaking out about that.
I mean,
this movie's not that great.
For example, a set I was working on, we tried to recreate a traffic light,
mm-hmm.
and we wanted control over the traffic light instead of having to rely on the actual traffic light.
Sure.
So we went to just like an empty street, and there was an intersection. Like we wanted the street lighting from the intersection, but we didn't want the traffic light necessarily, and we only had two like LED bar lights.
Right.
I forget what those are called. And so, like, we held up a red one, or a green one, sorry, and then we had the yellow one preset and held it right under it, and whenever we flipped it to yellow, then I had, like, 10 seconds to, like, run off, change it to the red setting, and come back, turn it back on, and have it on red. Super challenging. It was also a very small set. Like, it was, like, me and one other person holding the light, so... But yeah, it is challenging and it is impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Jump in if you have more things to say that you want to talk about. But I mean, I have more. I just wanted to give you that.
Yeah. I don't know. There were just a lot of things that happened that I didn't necessarily catch on to. Mm-hmm. Some of them I didn't write down. Some of them I did. Let's see. I did mention that it's, I don't know if I said this, it was kind of quick at the start, like first probably 20 minutes or so. Yeah. Definitely like a quick film, and especially with the language in it.
Sure.
It was hard for me to catch on to right at the start. And I did write down the dude she liked proposes and she says no, ?
Yeah.
Which now that we've talked about it, we've kind of cleared that up a little bit and, you know, there were stakes involved and obviously he did something that, she wasn't a fan of, kind of splitting up the marriage between her sister and,
Mr. Bingley.
Is that like a cousin to Darcy or
a friend?
Friend. Gotcha. Yeah. Kind of splitting that up. Elizabeth was not a fan of that. Rightfully so, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Since you just mentioned the scene in the rain, that beautiful scene in the rain.
Go for it.
I
don't remember it being in the rain. If we're being honest, like I don't remember.
You don't remember the thunder? That was kind of corny. All right, this is one thing in the movie that is I always go, that's kind of corny.
I remember it being like dark and kind of gloomy.
Yeah,
I do not remember.
They're drenched
it raining.
They're soaking wet. You don't remember that? They're soaked while they're having this conversation. Anyway, either way, it's raining and like when they say something really heavy or something that hits hard, the thunder cracks. I
didn't know.
A little too far.
Is it the conversation when they're
when he says I love you, I'm proposing to you, and she's like no.
Was this at
they're in like the
his house or
mausoleum type thing? They're like out in like that marble structure after church. Because she tells him, because remember Fitzwilliam in the church during the sermon is like, tells her, he's whispering to her, and he says, Mr. Darcy broke up the engagement between Jane and Mr.
Yes.
And okay. She runs out, and he runs after her and says, I want to marry you. And they have a long conversation about, well, I'll talk about that right now, actually. I have written here, Seeing the Rain is amazing, right? I wrote under that, something I realized during that is this: the movie shows exactly what Darcy is thinking without Darcy having to say what he's thinking until this scene. Despite him being a secondary character to Elizabeth, we still understand his point of view and really sympathize with him, even though we see everything from Elizabeth's point of view. But I just thought it was impressive that Darcy's was shown. We'd already talked about the family. We talk about how he breaks up with Jane, or he breaks up Jane and Bingley because he thought Jane indifferent. He thought she didn't care. And we totally see that. Like, there's a conversation between Jane and Elizabeth where they're like unsure about, like, does he love me, or like I don't know, like, if he thinks I love him. Like, so Jane's even unsure about that, and like, it's clear through the observation of them that Jane is really shy and doesn't seem like she cares a lot. And I think that was really well shown. And then the fact that he excludes Liz and Jane from the rest of the family, like what we talked about, it's so clear cut that they are different from the rest of the family. Even the dad, you know, and like, they seem different from him. And like, that's so evident somehow from the very start. And Darcy also picked that up. So like, it helps a lot for him to say things in the movie, and you're like, oh yeah, I totally sympathize with that point.
Yeah.
And that really helps with not just, then you don't say like, oh, Mr. Darcy's a jerk, but rather like, oh, like, these are the things he's experiencing, and like, I see why he feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was just super, super impressive. I thought that there were moments that were handled so delicately. I talked about like little details in the cinematography and how well the blocking was done. But I just think that, like, I guess it's acting that's done well, but like facial expressions, the smallest little things, especially in Keira Knightley's face, she's so, so expressive, I think, were done so well. And this sounds like it's too much of a statement, but like, I just think there's moments in cinema where like, there's the perfect mix of like, the actors that were cast and the camera work and the story, that it just like, there's a harmony. And I don't think that's captured in even some of the best movies like I've seen. It works and it's a great movie and maybe the story is amazing, but like, for this movie, for me, there's moments that like, feel like this movie was so meant to be made with these characters. And it's just, it's kind of hard to explain. But like, I think it's good vision by the director and the casting agent, and just like, and the cinematographer, and like the synergy that goes there. And it's just, you kind of have to watch the movie to understand that. And like, you didn't get that, and that's fine. But like, I don't know what it is, but it just, so impressive to me.
I'm interested. What other films do you think?
I was trying to think about it yesterday. I was trying to think what other movie nails detail so well. The cinematography feels so true to the story and the characters. Down to the faces of the actors were like meant to be in this movie, I felt. Specifically the scene when Jane and Elizabeth are under their covers talking to each other about like something that happened earlier in the day, and it's just like, geez, this is like, it's one of those moments I think I talked about earlier this year or this season where I was like, I will never make something this great, and most people alive that make amazing movies will never make something this great. And I don't know if I can think of another movie that I feel does it as well as this one. And again, I think that like, there's movies where you can say, okay, yeah, that's a better movie, maybe not to me, but like, you know, like, where, like, name a critically acclaimed movie that's considered one of the best of all time.
Pulp Fiction. Nope. Yeah. Okay, never mind.
I mean, yeah, maybe that. But like, let's say like
Titanic.
Schindler's List is considered one of the best movies of all time. Yeah, Titanic. I can't talk about that movie.
Okay. Oh my god.
No, it's fine. It's fine. No, you're good. But like I don't. Schindler's List, I think, probably nails that pretty well. Like Liam Neeson in that role. There's glimpses of that too. But for some reason, there's just something about what.
The Dark Knight Rises.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't say that. I think like Shrek's probably next. I would say Lego Movie has like similar, not quite the same, but like the animation, the characters, like the job well done of like voice acting. Like it has glimpses of that. I'd say like About Time, again, not like a critically acclaimed movie, or like no one think, but there's like, I've met like a few people that are like, oh yeah, that's one of my favorite movies. It's like, why? And I think there's just something about it, just something. Like the character, perfectly casted in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The tone matches the cinematography so well, and I don't know. I don't know enough about like the topic to be able to decipher it, I think, and that's where I'll leave that.
Yo, was I out of my mind to say Pulp Fiction first?
No, because that is like that's a lot of people's favorite movie. That's a really good movie, but I mean, and I guess you could say that about the cinematography and the. And the style of the movie, because that's a very stylized movie, you know. But in a way, like a stylized movie almost loses that for me. Like a Wes Anderson movie, let's say. Like where... I'm losing it. But like it's so stylized that it's like, okay, this is this own guy's vision. This is this own guy's movie. Where like Pride and Prejudice doesn't feel stylized to me.
Hmm.
It feels so real. It like... It helps that they're out in nature a lot, but it feels very natural, and I'm not gonna go on because like I don't know that anyone knows what I'm talking about right now, and I'm not making myself clear. But anyway, perfect movie, best movie of all time. Sorry, just a couple more notes. I already talked about that. I thought it was cool that we never see Mr. Darcy away from Elizabeth. We only do one time. When he's out next to the lake helping Mr. Bingley prepare his proposal. And it's like a 10-second
mm-hmm.
clip. Which is kind of funny because like you kind of wonder, it's like, what's this weird stoic guy act like when he's just around friends? And you see just a glimpse of that, but you kind of wonder. But it's interesting because he's always on edge. He's always on edge until the very end of the movie. He's kind of prepared himself to go to these balls. And he's like kind of prepared in that way. But when he's like outside of his comfort zone and he comes to visit Elizabeth after she tells him like you should practice like talking to people, he's just like a wreck. And you never see him when he's not on edge until the very end when they're in love and like everything's said and done and they're mm-hmm. the very last scene. And I think that was really cool. Last thing, I'm kind of speaking through this because I'm taking up too much time talking. Character introductions. Really great. You have Elizabeth walking through like nature, reading, and again, we've talked a lot about the family. You immediately know who these members of the family are based off just what they're doing, how they're reacting to things. Mary, the youngest, who plays piano, you know she's the black sheep of the family. It's like very clear based off her introduction. The big party was about Mr. Bingley. No one talked about Mr. Darcy before he was shown. The party was great about Mr. Bingley because Jane was going to go and, you know, fall in love with Mr. Bingley. That was the goal. And they were, the whole Bennett family was super excited about that. Upon arriving at the party and getting there, Mr. Darcy, Bingley, and his sister enter, but Mr. Darcy's front and center. And it's very clearly this moment's about Mr. Darcy, a really strong character introduction.
Mm-hmm.
And he glances at Elizabeth for a moment and like they lock eyes and it's like a very tense and heavy moment just for like an instant. And it was immediately set. It's like, okay, I know what's going to happen for the rest of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quickly reinforced by the way that they interact at that party. And it's not a very cordial, you know, interaction. Mr. Collins, really good character introduction when they open the door and he's standing there looking goofy, holding books.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all making fun of him at the dinner table while they're eating. And it's going over his head. He doesn't understand. Really good character introduction for him. And Lady Catherine, played by Judi Dench again. What's up?
Was that guy, Mr. Collins, also in About Time?
Yes, he's he's the guy, the writer that he stays with. Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Lady Catherine, they go to her manor, and there's just this slow reveal. You see her like huge, fancy hair, and her room with oil paintings all over the wall, and how like ornate her room is, and it slowly reveals her, and it's just like a really big moment, and. Yeah, I mean, I think I could go on and on about how great this movie is. And I want to try to develop in my head, like, what I mean about, like, all the elements mixing so well. Because I don't really know what I mean. It's just kind of a feeling while you're watching it.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much all from me. I appreciate you watching it. I'll say that much. I'll say that. Like, I appreciate you watching and then coming to talk about it.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, like, having the opposition and views on on the film, especially since it's, like, literally your favorite of all time.
Right.
And, like, me being closed off, not interested, whatever, I hit pause, went to sleep because I was that not interested, and coming in here and being able to hear you, like, go very in-depth about why you feel the way that you do is very interesting, and I felt rewarding. So
awesome. That's nice of you to say.
I might mess around and watch it again.
I'd give it some time and then maybe
try. Right. Yeah. Obviously not right away, but
what I'll close on, I guess, then is not every movie is for everyone. That's just it. And I think that, and it's not a testament to like you not being ready to watch it either. Because I remember, I don't know how old I was, but I watched it when I was pretty young, and like all I feel like I was watching at the time was Indiana Jones and Star Wars. And my family was going to watch this movie, and I was like, I know what book this is. Like, I read Jane Eyre, and I was like, I don't like books like this. And so I remember watching it with my family and being like, oh, I don't want to admit that I like this movie, but that was a great, great movie. And so, like, and I didn't understand it. I didn't understand the dialogue. Like, but there was something about it at that moment, and I enjoy it even more today. So, like, the movie isn't for everyone, and that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Further developments. Earlier in the episode, I talked about how I was nervous about the group project thing.
Yeah.
Going wrong. Apparently, I guess I can spill the beans now. An object that we rented.
An expensive object.
A very, very expensive object that we rented. Had gone missing, and I was very nervous because I don't know what that situation is like, having to, you know, pay for that or whatever. Turns out one of the group members put it in their locker and was not replying to the group message, so we were not aware. But thankfully it has turned up. I'm no longer nervous. I will no longer have to pay a big chunk of change to repay for it. So
amazing. I'm glad to hear that.
Yes, thankfully. Great way to end the episode. Thankfully. But now that you finished up, I will finish up and say, whenever they met in the field and Darcy proposed, they met in the field. That felt unrealistic to me.
Okay. I want to talk about that then.
Go ahead.
Unrealistic.
Well, no, that's it. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
I understood this for the first time this time watching it. Because we had this joke where he comes out of the swamp. Because he's walking through this mist with, like, pajamas on. Like, he doesn't have his shirt on, really. And we're like, what is this, Shrek walking out of the swamp? No, but, like, he's walking to her house. Like, she's been the whole movie. Like, she loves walking. And she, like, walks places she doesn't. They own a carriage, but they don't use it. And, like, otherwise she has to go on horseback. And she's a weird person. Like, I think it's unlike, it's not ladylike, right. Air quotations, yeah. At the time, to like walk places and be like that. And like, and they make comments about, he makes comments about, right. You enjoy walking. He's like, I know. Or she's like, I enjoy walking. He said, I know you do. Like, he makes comments about it. That's something that they notice, and it's strange at the time. At the end, he walks to her, and he would never walk. He always rides carriages. He's really wealthy. And I thought that, this time I was like, oh my gosh, he's walking to her because he loves her. And I thought that was so sweet and so significant.
Right. However, them meeting at the exact spot where they did seems
unrealistic. I'll give that to you.
And then lastly, the sunset shot in that same scene was very nice.
It's beautiful.
It can never go wrong with a good old sunset shot.
Sunrise, actually.
Sunrise. Sorry. My bad. Was a nice little silhouette shot using the sun as the backlight. But yeah, that's all I have.
Yeah. Also, one more thing. Great soundtrack. Great soundtrack. The main song, the featured song, is Dawn. Dawn means sunrise, right? Dawn is light coming. Yes.
Yes.
Dusk is light going away.
Yep.
Dawn. So like the end, there's a sunrise and it's dawn. Really sweet. Also, okay, I'm looking at this from last week. This is a little tidbit to end the episode about Arrival that I forgot to talk about last week in the episode. The violin song in Arrival at the end is palindromic, which means that it's the same forwards and backwards.
Wait, the what?
The violin music at the end of Arrival is palindromic.
Whoa.
And even the harmony under it is like the same forward. You can switch them in there.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That fits the movie
well. Like, it's about time and like, yeah.
That's crazy.
Which is, I thought, cool. That reminded me because I was talking about the soundtrack. Please go on Spotify and listen to the soundtrack of Pride and Prejudice, maybe while you're studying. I walk the streets of New York and listen to it.
Interesting. I will say before we wrap it up, this is like a Midwestern ending. We've started the ending like four times. We knew this episode was going to be a little long, so we didn't mention anything about Arrival, what people sent us via message or whatever. So we will cover that next week.
Yep.
As well as stuff from this episode. So be on the lookout for the question box for that, and we'll address that in the next episode.
Yes.
Speaking of, I have
Aiden,
the film.
What is the movie for next episode?
The film for episode 7 of season 4 of the End of the Stuff podcast will be the 2016 drama Manchester by the Sea.
Okay.
Which can be found on Amazon Prime Video.
It's an Amazon original.
Is starring Casey Affleck
and Michelle Williams and Lucas Hedges,
and you know me, big fan of Kyle Chandler.
That's right, you are film. That's right.
Matthew Broderick as well.
That's right. How he about plays that? Stepdad.
But yes, I have not seen this film. Michael has seen it, not for a while, I think he said.
It's been a number of years.
It's been on my list. I've actually have it tabbed on my computer. I was about to watch it earlier this week. So I've been itching to watch it for a little while. So
awesome.
Interested and excited for that.
Well, again, Amazon Prime. Watch it. And Pride and Prejudice, nah, forget it. You probably watched it, you probably didn't, I don't care.
If you want to, it's on
Peacock again. Yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. This is a longer episode, so thank you for sticking with us this long. We'll see you next week to talk about Manchester by the Sea.
Continue to
rate,
review,
all the things.
Share.
And
share
talk
to your
us.
Instagram
talk
story.
To us about what you think.
Send us messages via text, through Instagram DM, through the question box, whatever.
Did you really dislike this movie, or did you think it's the best movie ever? Only those two.
Those are two very polar opposites.
No, that's the only option.
But yeah, everyone, thanks for tuning in.
And yeah, we will see you next week.
Peace.